What's up, y'all? You know what time it is. I am back from vacation, at least for the next couple of days. Got some stuff to tell y'all about me, but that'll be a little bit later on in the week.
Yeah! NBA Straya. How you going? That's right, man. It's NBA Straya. It is Wednesday, July 24. And I'm your host, James Clements. That's right, man. I'm a writer for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet folding stuff. And I'm back here in Larry Armour Studios, giving you the lowdown on who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, and of course, who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA offseason. Today, breaking down, wrapping up every little bit of NBA action for you, while repping Straya just a little bit, mate. It's what we do. All right, so I'm back from holidays. Got some sun. Smashed about a million tins in Fiji. That was awesome. Voila. It was great fun. But anyway, on this week's NBA Straya, we're joined by none other than the ledge himself, the most famous Aussie in Milwaukee, or it's Algonquin for the good land, Bucks beat writer Kane Pittman. Yes, it's awesome. Kane joins us to talk all about his wild year going from Geelong to Milwaukee and covering the Bucks day in, day out. Other stuff like, you know, whether or not it was his fault that Dele and Thon got traded. Getting to hang out with none other than the bloody NBA MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo. We also, talk about him moving to the US, what it's like being a beat writer for the NBA, American beers, getting roasted by Popovich, and what the Bucks outlook is for next season. There's loads more in there. It's really good. It's a really, really, really fun chat with Kane. So I hope you enjoy that. We're also going to close out with a fan favorite, Cooking with Bainesy, which is going to be awesome. All right, man. It's NBA Straya, episode 318. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Straya.
All right. As I said at the top of the show, we are today joined by our man who was in Amsterdam. And when I say Amsterdam, I mean Milwaukee. I hear it's Algonquin for the good land. That's right. He spent a year becoming best mates with Giannis Antetokounmpo and hanging out, talking shit with Mike Budenholzer, Brooke Lopez, his new best mate, the Big Ragu, no doubt. When he's not having Ringer articles written about him, he spent the last year as the Milwaukee Bucks beat writer for the pickandroll.com.au and has been featured in the Herald Sun, everywhere else that you can read good basketball writing. He's Geelong's favorite son, the non-Paddy Dangerfield, Gary Ablett Jr., Cameron Ling division. It's bloody Kane Pittman. Kane, how you going, mate?
I'm doing well. That is, I have not had a better intro than that, so that's a good start. That's a very good start.
Well, I mean, you're back in time for a glorious Geelong winter at the moment. You're back in Australia. I mean, how are the frosts down at Lambie's? I mean, or the old, or the pub that my old mate Steve runs, the Workers Club.
Yeah, I might have actually checked out Lambie's on Sunday night. I went to the Geelong game, so I might have just got straight back into it about 3 days after I got off the plane. And it's the same as it's always been. I could confirm.
Nice one. So my old band played like the Nash a million times, but I've been told that doesn't exist anymore.
I don't know. Maybe some. I'm pretty sure they redid it and it was open again before I left. But I'm not sure.
I can't imagine that CC was it CC Music, CC Geelong Records and Tapes. I'm not sure if that's still there either. But anyway, so you're back in Geelong. How's the entire ride been, Kane? Like, what prompted you, like, at the very, like, you know, basically looking back almost 12 months where you're just like, fuck it, I'm moving to Milwaukee. Just the main one big takeaway, like, has it just been a fucking whirlwind of a 12 months for you?
Yeah, it's weird. I think that it feels like it at the time it was going quick until I was packing up my stuff and I was like, man, it feels like I've been here for a long time. But yeah, that was, you pretty much said it. That was pretty much how it went. I was just like, fuck it, I'm going. And within 4 weeks, I was gone. I handed in my notice and was over there. So I didn't have too much time to really plan anything, which maybe that worked out better. I don't know. But yeah, it was, it did happen quickly from when I decided to go over there. And then I was at NBA games. So It was fun though.
It's a wild story, and like it's being written about, like obviously as I said, by The Ringer and a bunch of other places as well. But like the actual decision tree of you going, all right, I'm working in, was one of the oil refineries up there in like Corio or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. You drive past those. We used to drive past those on the way down from Melbourne, but now they've got the bypass. You don't have to if you don't want to, which is substantially nicer. But so you're working there and you're like, all right, nah, fuck it. I'm sick of this. This is bullshit. I want to go cover NBA games. Like, what's the decision tree then that like this all leads to?
I was obviously doing a lot of writing for the Pick and Roll before that, and doing some other stuff, covering some national team games and that sort of stuff. And I had covered some Bucks games the season before, where I'd just fly over, go to a couple of games, and then fly back. But I did want to try and you know make that my career. So the challenge was, or the problem was, that I had worked in the refinery for 6 years and then did my apprenticeship before that. So to do that, it was going to have to be drop everything that I've done for the last decade or whatever, and then go over there and just see what happens, and go from being paid a wage to not being paid, and then just trying to figure it out. So it did take me a while to make that decision, but I talking with the guys at the Pick and Roll and Ben Malice. I know you're Ben Malice, and we both just decided to take that plunge.
Yeah, I mean, we had Ben Malice in the Palace on the show, was it like 2 or 3 weeks ago? And it was really cool to sort of talk to him about covering the his decision, obviously, to go from fucking Perth to Philly, which is like a even bigger drop off, I think, in terms of weather and stuff than it is even from you to go from Geelong to Milwaukee. It's also, I feel like it's kind of neat that you moved to the Midwest version of Geelong. Like Milwaukee is just like, 2 hours down the road from Chicago. So Basically you've got the Midwest version of Geelong right there. And you're like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about this whole, slightly smaller city to the big city just down the road, right?
Yeah, no, I love Milwaukee. I've been there quite a bit over the previous sort of 3 or 4 years. It made it easier that I did have friends there and I knew a bunch of people there, but it is pretty similar. It's bigger than Geelong. So first of all, it is bigger than Geelong, but in terms of, like you said, going up the road or down the road to the big city, and it's pretty quiet like Geelong. You know, never have to worry about any traffic or having any issues going where you need to go. They're on the lake down there. I mean, not that you're hanging down the lake in winter, but it's a cool city. It's fun. I really enjoyed it, and it did. It probably made the adjustment pretty easy going to a similar, smaller city.
Now the big question is, I mean, does Milwaukee have an all-you-can-eat Pizza Hut like Geelong did?
Geelong did, exactly. I don't know when that. I feel like that Pizza Hut bit the dust in. That had to be in the 90s, I think.
I just have like glorious memories of that all-you-can-eat Pizza Hut. Is all like, and like, you know, I grew up in Ballarat, so we've still got the all-you-can-eat Pizza Hut, which is the fucking best one in Victoria. It might be the only remaining one in Victoria, but still.
Yeah.
Nice one. But anyway, I also chatted. So you hang out with the Bucks. You become basically a beat writer. You hang out. You're living in Milwaukee. When you get there, you've got King Deli of Maribara and you've got Kung Fu Thon on that team. This is amazing. Yeah. You're like, sweet, I've got two Aussies. I've got them on the team that I'm covering. This is fucking perfect. And then as soon as you get there, basically, they fucking trade them away. What did you do, Kane? What did you do?
Yeah, well, that was a big part of the decision to go there as well. I mean, obviously, like I said, it made sense for me knowing people and that sort of stuff made it easier to move to America. But the fact that they had two Australians also made it easier just for simply getting media credentials and that sort of stuff, because you have to be – you can't just – they do check up on it. And if people are just freeloading going to NBA games for nothing, they'll probably pick up on it pretty quickly. So the fact that they had two Australians was great. I could run for the Pick and Roll. I could hassle those guys as much as I wanted. But, yeah, the Dali one was – that was early December. So I only really had Dali for about a month. And I remember we went to shoot around that morning. And he was there, and it was all normal. Everything was fine. And then it was a late game. They were playing the Warriors, and it was an 8:30 tip-off. So generally, if there's an 8:30 tip-off, I'll be at the arena till maybe 1 a.m., maybe later, depending on what happens. So It was about 4 o'clock and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get a little half an hour nap in here and then head over to the arena. And then as soon as I laid down, my phone started going off and I was dallied being traded. And I was like, well, like the nap is up. The nap is out. I'm heading straight to the arena and going to see what the hell happened. And by that point, he was already gone. So it was kind of weird. I was telling someone else because we went into the locker room. And this is the funny thing about a trade like that. I mean, obviously, a couple of hours ago, he was expected to play or, you know, could have played. So his jersey, his uniform and everything is still, you know, laid out in front of the locker, in the locker room, as if he was ready to come to the arena. So it all happens pretty quickly.
It's the ghost of Delhi Pass. I mean, it's like, were you filthy that he got traded? Like, were you sitting there going, God damn it, man. Like, this was like one of my great inns. Like, the kid from Maribor, it's a great story. I'm going to be here like, oh, yeah, this is going to be sick.
Yeah, it was fun having Dali there and fun as well. Obviously, he got traded a lot later, but having them two there was fun because, yeah, I could bullshit with Dali a little bit about footy and some other stuff, you know, outside of basketball as well. But certainly, you know, talking to an Aussie and having him there and someone I could, you know, always, you know, interview or whatever was going to be good for the year. So I think in the end it was a pretty good trade or a very good trade for the Bucks in terms of what they were trying to do. But from a selfish point of view, yes, it was not ideal.
Yeah, I was chatting to one of your editors there at the pickandroll.com.au, Damien, and he reckons that Dally and Thong got traded because Buds just got sick of hearing too many Australians.
That might have been the case. I told him. He said that after I said to Bud. I said, "Don't think you're trading them and you're getting rid of me. You're still going to put up with me for the rest of the season." So,
and yeah, I did throw Damien on the bus there. I actually said that, but Damien laughed. So it's actually weird now looking back at the Dally and Thon trades for Milwaukee, isn't it? Because they did get George Hill back in the Dally trade, which was a net big win, obviously, for them, considering that they end up letting Brogdon walk and suddenly they've got a pretty good veteran point guard that they can sort of plug and play. But on the flip side, the Thon trade, they get rid of a dude who was the number 10 pick. They bring in Mirotić. He just shits the bed pretty hardcore in the playoffs and then bounces to fucking Europe and they're suddenly left with nothing, right? It's pretty wild how they kind of balance each other out.
Yeah, so the Dally trade, obviously they got George Hill. I think at the time, the big part of that trade was simply the salary that the Bucks were getting out of. And obviously, Dally and John Henson, the other player in that trade, had deals around $10 million for another couple of seasons. And the Bucks knew that they were going to have to spend a lot of money to keep the team together at the end of the season. So I think making that trade, I don't think that they really banked on getting a lot out of George Hill. It ended up being more than just a money saver because Hill was incredible in the playoffs and now he's back for another couple of seasons. But with the Thon one, I mean, they wouldn't have traded Thon if Thon didn't make it sort of known that he wanted more opportunity somewhere else. I think that's the big thing, that they really liked Thon. But given how good the team was playing, there just wasn't really an opportunity for him to play. So I think given the circumstance, getting a guy like Mirotić was a pretty damn good trade because I think that was a guy that they hoped were going to put him over the top. Obviously, Mirotić shot whatever he shot, 18% in the conference finals, and it was a disaster. But I the thought process behind the trades made sense. But again, I mean, Thon would still be in Milwaukee if he wanted to be.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, we've just covered a little bit of this idea of, like, you actually, you know, hanging out around the team, being on the Milwaukee beat. Like, we talked about this with Ben about being around with Philly. Like, what's it actually like for you being at the coalface of an NBA team for like an entire season? Like, were you surprised at sort of watching the ups and downs of sort of people's opinions of each other, of the vibe around the team? Because obviously this turns into like a really good team. You have a couple of trades here and there, but they end up with the best record on this. They win 60 goddamn games. Was it really cool sort of being right there in the guts of it and just sort of seeing the way people responded to this team all through the year?
Yeah, for sure. And even just the transformation of how many people were at practice at the start of the season and how many people were at practice at the end of the season, just from a media point of view, like the interest around the team grew incredibly throughout the year. And then more national people would be showing up. You'd be get random you know, national reporters that would show up and be at practice or be at games and that sort of thing. So seeing that transformation was pretty incredible, particularly for Milwaukee, because it's not something that they've had for a long, long time. But the other thing is that there was no real controversy with this team. And I think Ben, and just from talking to him, and they had some real personalities on that team with obviously Ben and Joel and then Jimmy Butler as well. So I think he certainly had a different experience in terms of the locker room stuff. And at times I feel like Philly had some stuff going on, whereas Milwaukee, they were just destroying everyone. Yeah. And there was never any controversy. These guys just loved, they loved hanging out with each other. They were always having fun. There was really no moments where anyone was really down about anything other than when they lost, you know, the last game, because they were so good, which was kind of strange to see because you don't get that a lot.
For sure. I mean, it's pretty cool to like bring up the idea that Philly was just this sort of weird roiling mass of personalities, whatever. Like I even saw that when I was there in preseason and like just sort of hanging out there and sort of looking at the way that they interacted in the locker room. And like, was that one of the things that you sort of, like what was your vibe on Milwaukee, like in the locker room and stuff? Like, I just remember always the times I've been in locker rooms in the NBA, the way some teams interact with each other and the way others don't is one of my biggest sort of takeaways from that sort of stuff. What were the Bucks like? Were they sort of, you know, pally, chummy? Like, was there a lot of chatter or whatever?
Oh yeah, I mean this is what happens when you win. But they would, after every single game, before the game, after the game, the music would just be just fucking pumping in there. They would be talking, you know, shit to each other like nonstop, having fun, laughing, joking around because they were so loose. Because they would go out there, they would win, and you could definitely tell the difference between that locker room and just other teams, and even with, you know, the coach, like Bud was always pretty relaxed and he can be a pretty serious character, but he was always, you know, relatively, you know, in a good mood for a lot of the time. And you compare it to some of the other coaches that you'd see come in and you could just see that it looked like they were losing hair by the second they were that stressed out about what was going on with the season. And it was just the situation in Milwaukee was so different, but they've always said that the people that they're trying to bring in are good people and good locker room people. And I mean, I don't know. I haven't been around a team like that that genuinely liked each other like the Bucks did. Like from 1 through 15, there wasn't like one guy or two guys that were out. Like everyone was together the whole season. And that's probably why they had a pretty good run.
Did that change when it got to the pointy end of the playoffs though, do you reckon?
No, I don't think so, because even after they lost, and this team, every time they lost games, it was like the laughing stopped. I mean, this team was super competitive, and it started with Giannis, who's just a maniac competitor. But even after the season lost, they were after they lost game six, or things started to turn. I mean, they weren't happy, and they were trying to figure out what was going wrong. But they could lose game five as they did at home. And then going back to Toronto, we were at practice the next day and they were the same. They were laughing. They were joking around. They're like, we're not worried. This is what it is. We'll win tonight. It'll be fine. Obviously, they didn't. But it never, the mood never really changed with this team. And it certainly didn't feel like they were getting tight or getting, you know, frustrated with each other or anything like that. Even with guys that weren't playing well, nothing really changed with them at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with all this said, like, who was your actual favorite player to chat to on the Bucks? Was you know, apart from Giannis?
Yeah, I mean, Giannis was so good. Every time you got him one on one, which I was fortunate to get him one on one, you know, semi regularly, and he was incredible. But Thon was easily the best, because Thon was such a, I mean, he's just such a nice dude that he. Yeah, I mean, he was always open to talking to me at any point in time, before the game, after the game, practice, whatever. He was always there. So I always loved talking to Thon before he was traded.
Also, he's only a nice guy unless you're Filipino, you know? So,
yeah, well, if I started throwing a chair at him, I'm pretty sure he might, you know, things might change a little bit. But they had, who else did I like? George Hill was so good. He came out of his shell the longer the season went. When he first got traded, he was kind of quiet in the locker room and wasn't saying a lot. And by the end of the season, he was probably one of the best guys to talk to, because even through the playoffs when the Bucks were going through stuff, he always had perspective on what it meant and what they needed to do. I mean, he's been there. He was one of the only guys that had been there before. So him and Pau Gasol was the other one who was super nice. I like talking to both those guys.
Nice one. So you didn't rag on George Hill about his bleached hair at any point?
No, I didn't. But I actually saw, I completely forgot about that. I saw a photo come up on Twitter this morning, actually, that reminded me of those days for him. I'll have to bring that up again and see whether he's interested in bringing that back this season.
Yeah, his weird Jason Kidd tribute. Who was the weirdest bloke in the locker room? Like, I'd always suspect Brook Lopez because he was always the weirdest one in Brooklyn. But was it like, Brook's just a fucking weird dude, but he's also just a goofy dude. So he's not kind of weird. He's just kind of like a bit of a dork.
Yeah, Lopez is so strange because I think a lot of these guys care about what people, yeah, I mean, as most people do, they care about what people think about him or whatever, but Lopez genuinely does not give a shit. He'll show up in a Sonic t-shirt. He'll show up in a Mickey Mouse t-shirt or whatever it is. He doesn't care. And then if you even bring up Disney or Disney World or anything like that, I mean, you'll have him talking for half an hour or a movie, any type of movie, and he just doesn't care. He's like, yeah, I'm a nerd. I don't give a shit. This is what I am. I don't care what people think about me. I'm getting paid millions of dollars. I'm playing in the NBA. I don't care. Like, who are you? So Lopez is really cool. Weirdest guy is probably, I don't know. DJ Wilson is pretty different. Yeah, they didn't have too many out there guys. DJ Wilson is a little different. He's, I don't know. He's always sort of just keeping to himself. He'll be dancing in his locker before the game, after the game. He's, I don't know. They didn't have too many weird guys. DJ Wilson is a little out there though.
Nice. I mean, looking at this as, you know, from a beat writer perspective as well, like, was it kind of like cool? We've talked, like, we just sort of touched on this, like how the media changed when they got to the playoffs and it sort of got bigger and better. Like, would you agree that it was really way more fun of an experience, like being a beat writer in a smaller market versus a big market, so you can actually have those pretty close interactions with all these players?
Yeah, I think so for sure. Because I when you go to other cities and you know, as you know, New York or LA or wherever it may be, even Philly, where Ben was, it's, I mean, there's so much competition to get what you want. And the good thing about Milwaukee is we were there from the start of the season when there wasn't that many people around, and you are able to – the players know who you are. The coaches know who you are. Everyone in the organization knows who you are. So as the season goes on, as more people start to show up, they know that you've been there from the start. They know that you're not trying to you're not trying to write a story that's going to like throw up controversy or you know, talk shit about anyone. So at that point, you get the trust of players and the people working there. So I think it definitely had some pretty big advantages being in Milwaukee for sure.
Nice one. And what about the other, like, you know, in the Ringer article, there's a lot of coverage about Eric and Matt alongside you as well. Malika Andrews and the Bucks sideline reporter.
Katie George.
There you go, Katie George. Like, talking about all that, like, was it cool sort of building those relationships with those guys?
Yeah. I mean, they're particularly by the end of the season. And I don't know what's going to happen. I know Katie moved back to Louisville. She got a pretty sweet job with ESPN down there. So she's going to be gone. But, I mean, they became friends. I mean, we spent so much. Really, like, they're the people traveling. I didn't go to every game. I was at every home game, and I was probably at half of the road games, maybe a little bit more. So, and every time we traveled, really, it was just us. Like, yeah. we were the crew that were there traveling. So we hung out a lot. We would take any opportunity to go get a beer in a new city and go out and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we became super close. And, I know Eric's going to be out here in a few weeks for the Team USA stuff. He said earlier in the season he was going to have to get out here to see Australia after I was out there all season. And then I said, well, you know, Team USA is playing in August, and he didn't know at the time. So he's going to come out and hang out in August, which will be fun.
Nice one. You better take him to Lambies.
Yeah, I mean, probably will. I mean, it's probably going to happen, let's be honest.
I take it. I mean, press conferences as well. Like, you pretty famously had a great interaction with Greg Popovich. Did you both literally and figuratively shit yourself when he started popping you? Like, you were less dorky David Aldridge or something?
Well, it's funny because I definitely knew it was going to happen, and I hadn't spoke to or had an interaction with Pop before, so that was the first time I came across him. But I did decide before I went there, I was like, well, I mean, he's in Milwaukee. I'm probably not going to see him again for the rest of the season. If he starts, trying to go at me, I can either say nothing and be like, you know, a lot of other people where the question goes nowhere, that he doesn't answer it, or I can give him a bit back. And honestly, I've found that if you're not rude to him, or from what I've seen, then he enjoys that.
Yep.
Like he, that's what he's there for. He just wants a little bit of banter. So I think he took it pretty well. I think some people read the actual interaction and thought that he was being rude, but I mean, he had a big smile on his face. He was laughing. So it was pretty cool. That was definitely the coolest pregame interaction I had all season.
I mean, with that said, like, as well, what do you think of like the etiquette of like a press conference, like the actual press, you know, sit downs after the games and the scrums before and after as well? Like, what did you like take away from those actual experiences? Like, they're pretty full on, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And again, it depends on the situation, and you know, fortunately or not fortunately, depending on what you're trying to do. For the Bucks, they were always playing so well, so there was rarely a time where the Bucks played poorly or they were in bad form, and then you had to really tiptoe around what you were trying to ask. Fortunately, again, when you talk about the relationships you make, we established pretty quickly with Bud. Obviously, it was his first year in Milwaukee, that we weren't there trying to have a go at him or talk shit about him or anything he was trying to do. So it got to the point where even in the playoffs when the Bucks were losing, you could ask like difficult questions about maybe a decision he made or whatever, and he would respect that and answer that. But that's not always the case, and sometimes it gets pretty pretty testy in there if someone that maybe the coach doesn't know or someone from out of town comes in and asks a pretty pointed question. They often don't get a very sharp answer.
Nice one. And did you like get pretty good at doing the very famous, you know, sports reporter sidle when you're trying to get like a little bit of one-on-one time? Did you get that perfected by the end of the season?
The best time to do it, honestly, is at practice, and even better is at road shoot around. So they make it pretty difficult in at home in the locker rooms, because you can go up and talk to players, but they generally try and guide them into the media scrum anyway.
Yep.
Whereas if you're at a practice, you know, by the end of the season, I would just get to the point where I'd be like, all right, the player's walking past me, I'm just going to let go to him and like try to talk to him and take him somewhere by myself where no one else is going to try and jump in. So it is an art. There's people that are better at it than others, but I think for the most part, you probably need longer than a year before you're an expert at in that caper.
I dig it. And right, the big one is Giannis. Like, it's the fucking MVP of the goddamn league, right? So did you see any like change in him throughout the year as he kind of maybe realized that, shit, I'm actually like an MVP favorite, I'm out here dominating, holy crap? Like, did you see like a sort of switch in him as he realized that he could actually win MVP? Did his demeanor change at all? Like, or was he just always pretty chill about everything?
Yeah, he never changed at all. But the thing with Giannis that's been the same, even when I've been around the Bucks in previous seasons, he doesn't particularly like doing media stuff anyway. He would rather just show up, play, get dressed, go home. And so the media stuff isn't something that he particularly enjoys. So certainly before games, he won't talk. And at practice, he will do anything he can to get out of talking, just because he's just not interested in doing that. After the games, he doesn't really get away with it. He always gets sort of pushed into the scrum. But yeah, he didn't change at all. But probably, and he never really showed any signs of this. But probably, if anything, the longer the season went, the more people wanted to talk to him. It probably became more annoying than anything for him, how much attention he was getting. But, yeah, I mean, as someone that was around from the start of the season and watching him say no to every single reporter that comes up to him pregame, I was like, Giannis, can we talk? And he's just like, no, I don't talk. And then seeing – and just more and more people getting rejected like that, he was probably more frustrated than anything for him.
Nice one. And what was it actually like being there sort of around him day in, day out, watching this, everyone is sort of expecting him to be a bit of an MVP candidate at the start of the year, and then it was fucking on. Like, he was just putting up these crazy numbers, and it's like, if he just keeps like kind of doing this, like he's got it fucking wrapped up, then everyone's falling over themselves to give James Harden the award, what, three quarters of the way through the season, completely forgetting the fact that Harden was also on the team that started off 11-14 or whatever. So I was always fucking pro Giannis this entire season. Was it weird just sort of watching him go out there and kick ass and like dominate? To be that close to an MVP must be pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing when I look back at it now, and obviously being home, because that's what so many people were asking. They're just like, well, you realize that you just covered the MVP and the Bucks' best season they've had in 30 years. And I'm like, yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. Like, when you put it that way, to think how well it all panned out. But the big thing is that Giannis's stats were pretty similar to what they were the season before. He had, you know, a few more rebounds, a few more assists, but the big thing was that the Bucks were just really, really good. And I think that for MVP, that becomes such a big part of the narrative, that if your team's really good, then you have a better chance of winning. And that's why I never really thought that there was any chance that Harden was going to beat Giannis. And I think the voting in the end, well, I mean, it wasn't even close, because I think that a lot of people probably rewarded the Bucks and Giannis for how good they were. But yeah, there was certainly times now when I think back, and like when I said before that Giannis doesn't talk before games, he doesn't do interviews before games, but with certain people, you can go up to him and bullshit a little bit. And fortunately, from being around through the season, I was one of those people that he would be cool if I went up to him. And there was a couple of times, I don't know whether you, did you hear the radio announcer from Philadelphia when Bledsoe threw that ball at Embiid? So it was late in the season, Eric Bledsoe threw the ball at Embiid, got ejected from the game. It was really, really early in the game. It was a regular season game. And this Philly radio announcer, I'll send it to you after we finish it, but this Philly radio announcer just went absolutely berserk, like just crazy. He's like, that is the most violent act I've seen in years. Get him out of the game. You need to get him out of the game now. So the next day the Bucks were playing and Giannis was sitting there, and I was like, all right, I got to show him this shit. So I went up to him. I'm like, hey, did you hear the Philly radio announcer? He's like, no, I didn't. And then like I gave him my phone, played the audio, and he's just losing it. This is what he got. He like gets my phone. He like starts walking around trying to show everyone. Then Bledsoe walks in. He's like, Bledsoe, you need to come here and listen to this. And he's just like grabbing Bledsoe and showing him this audio and stuff like that. You know, when you think about that, I guess, after, and he's just like, man, this guy won the MVP and I've just been showing him anything I find funny on my phone all season long. Like, it's pretty cool.
I dig it. But what else? I mean, like, with Giannis, you know, you're mates with him, basically. Where do your loyalties now lie as an Aussie? Ben Simmons or as a Bucks fan with Giannis?
Well, I mean, it changes, first of all. Like, when you're covering a team, and this is something that I was talking about with some friends the other day, I'm like, yeah, I didn't really, you probably lose when you're there at the game the whole time and you're trying to work and trying to get stories and trying to do all this stuff. You do lose that fandom a little bit. You're just there working, and it sounds weird, but, and it's super, it's fun. Like, it's very, very enjoyable, but you do lose that a little bit. So I hope Ben Simmons does well when he's playing for Australia. I hope he has a good career, but I'm never going to be someone that's going to be sitting here saying, gee, I hope Philly win because of Ben Simmons. That's never going to be the case.
I mean, you've been a Bucks fan since what, 2001? Was that right?
Yeah. It's been a lot of losing seasons until this year.
Yeah. At least you've still got a team, man. Like, I grew up as a Seattle Supersonics fan. And so when people ask me, oh man, so who do you go for? I'm like, well, fucking no one, because I don't have a team anymore. This is bullshit.
They'll be back soon. It's coming.
Yeah. I'm like, every time the NBA talks about, you know, all the things they want to do, I'm like, you know, the cool, we're going to do maybe a play-in tournament to the playoffs. That'd be fucking sick. Or just a mid-season tournament. How about we get two more fucking teams so I can get Seattle and like just put a fucking team in Vegas already. Let's get done with this fucking thing. Let's just expand. We expanded fucking like every year basically between like 88 and like 2005, and then suddenly, oh, no, we can't do that anymore. Get the fuck out of here. Did you actually have a fucking hell moment, like where you were just like, this is just so fucking cool, I can't believe I'm here? I mean, other than pop roasting you.
Yeah, Pop, that was pretty cool. I mean, there was a couple of things that just happened. There was one story that I told in another story, but I'll go with it again because it's one of my favorite ones. We were in Oakland for the Warriors Bucks games. This is super early in the season. This is November, so I'd probably been in Milwaukee for just like 4 or 5 weeks or something like that. And we were in Oakland. We were in San Francisco actually for Bucks practice, and they practiced downtown in the city in San Francisco. And we were packing. It was me, Matt, and Eric, and we were packing up our stuff to leave practice. And same, like I said, we would always go somewhere for lunch. So Matt picked out somewhere for lunch. He knew some people there. He had a tip off. He said, "This place is a place to go." We're like, "All right, let's go." We're walking out the back of where they were practicing, and Giannis walks out the back door with a couple of Bucks, staff, and they were looking for the bus. They had to get on the bus, the second bus, but the bus was going to take too long to get there because San Francisco, the traffic was just bullshit. So Giannis goes, "I'm just going to walk." And so their hotel was about 5 blocks away or something like that. So we just kept walking, but as it took, like, the timing of it meant that we were walking with Giannis and these Bucks staff people. So it was me, Matt, Eric, Giannis, and as I said, a couple of the coaching staff. And Giannis is walking down the street in the middle of San Francisco, middle of the day. He's got a Bucks singlet on. He's got ice on both knees. He's just walking down the middle of the street. And I said to him, we get to a traffic light, and no one's saying anything to him. Like, no one is bothering him. Nothing's happening. We're just walking down the street. And I said to him, we get to the traffic lights, and I'm like, man, I'm like, this is probably, when you look at me, I'm like, this is probably not the security you want when you walk down the middle of the street. And he's like, Kane, I don't want to get security, because when you get security, then people notice who you are. And I was like, Giannis, like, you're 7 foot tall, walking in with a basketball singer and ice on your knees, like, people can recognize you. And he's just like, nah, and he just sort of shrugged his shoulders. And then we were going straight, and Giannis was about to turn right to get to the hotel, and we got halfway across the street, and then Giannis was like, guys, he's like, we're going this way, hotel's this way. And we're like, Giannis, we are not staying at the team hotel. We never stay at the team hotel. Like, are you inviting us back to your hotel right here? Like, what is happening? And he was just like, he was completely confused. He's just like, oh, yeah. He's like, all right, then see you tonight. So we just looked at each other after that. And we're just like, what the hell just happened?
It's almost like people wouldn't have actually believed that it was Giannis. Like, it's an actual, like, they're being punked or something. Like, they've gotten someone to dress up like Giannis because it's almost too obvious.
Yeah, no, it was just one of the strangest things that I think that story sort of sums up who he is, like, that he doesn't really think that he's above anyone or better than anyone. He was just like, yeah, guys, we're going this way. Like, he was genuinely worried that we were going to get left behind in the team. So it's cool.
What a fucking legend. That's awesome. So, look, heading into the next season, I guess, for the Bucks and stuff, I mean, you've been pretty optimistic, I think, about your outlook for them. And I tend to agree with the idea that, you know, they're a 60-win team that didn't really change anything too much. They lost, what, a 26-year-old point guard who missed 52 games over the last 2 years. Like, yeah. Do you think, like, this team, as presently constructed, can win the title?
Well, I think they can. I think that a big thing that's going to help them out is that the East is just not going to be very good. And I thought the East had a bit of a bounce back year last year because they had probably 4 or 5 teams that were actually really good. And obviously, Toronto ends up winning the title. But this year, I mean, outside of Milwaukee and Philadelphia, Brooklyn, could be pretty good. They could be a wild card if they do get Durant back, but that's a big question mark. So, just from that standpoint, the fact that it's Milwaukee and Philly right from the start, there should be a lot of wins for the Bucks. And as you said, they're bringing back almost everyone from last year outside of Brogdon, but they replaced him with Wes Matthews, and they get Lopez's brother and Kyle Korver as well. So I think that they're looking really good. Depending on what happens out west, I think that they have to like their chances to at least get back to the conference finals again, and then hopefully go a step further.
Yeah, I love the pairing up of the low pie, because I've always said that if you combine the two, you'd have the single greatest center in the NBA for like the last, basically since Shaq. But unfortunately, their parents, had twins, and they split all the fucking, they split the, uh, the basketball talents almost straight down the fucking middle, which is just completely bizarre. But I like that pickup. Obviously, the Korver one's great. Just as many shooters as you can get around Giannis, you're laughing. And, I mean, yeah, Wes Matthews, same sort of thing. That was, like, sneakily under the radar, wasn't it? It was, like, weirdly – he was such a big pickup for Indy, and then it sort of didn't work out that great because he was – I don't know, it was a bit late in the season. Not much really happened there. And that team was just a bit funky anyway. Whereas Milwaukee getting for basically fucking nothing, which is crazy.
Yeah, he's a great shooter. Catch and shoot. Yeah, he's always shot a pretty good percentage. And probably the difference between Indy and Milwaukee is that when he went to the Pacers, they had obviously lost Oladipo, and they were like, well, we really need a guy that can score every single night. That's not going to be the case in Milwaukee. And it wasn't the case for Brogdon either. He's going to be the fifth option, maybe this fifth or sixth option in the offense, and it's just going to have to shoot open threes. So I think for $3 million or $4 million, whatever they got him for on the minimum compared to paying Brogdon $85 million to go to the Pacers, I think they did pretty well.
Yeah, poor Indy. I mean, Tyreek Evans was there on drugs the entire time.
Yeah.
It's a goddamn shame. Another future one for you. Can Giannis win back-to-back MVPs? What do you reckon? We do the old yeah, nah on NBA Australia, Kane. So what do you reckon? Giannis, back-to-back MVPs, yeah, nah?
Oh, man, I probably nah. And only because it's the MVP is so narrative-driven. And I feel like once someone wins one, like we saw that with Westbrook and Harden. Once Harden missed it that year, you could have put your house on him winning the next year, no matter what happened between them two. That's the way it tends to work. So, yeah, if Giannis takes another huge leap, like a big leap, then and starts banging threes, then yeah, I could see it happening. But I think there'll be someone else that the media probably falls in love with next season.
Yeah, is like that the one big thing? Do you think he can still really improve on just his shooting? What was it, like 25.6% or something last year? Was that right?
Yeah, definitely the shooting. I know after the thing with Giannis is that playing under Jason Kidd told him not to shoot threes, made everyone feel really uncomfortable about shooting threes if they weren't great shooters. So he wasn't really developing that with anyone. So now, but it took a little while after the new year, Giannis shot, I think, 34% from three, which is obviously pretty good. So if he's confident shooting that, then I think he can get up over 30%, which would be obviously... if he starts shooting three as well, I don't know what you do.
Yeah. And who would have thought Jason Kidd and his coaching style rubbing people the wrong way? You wouldn't read about it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in LA. That's going to be a lot of fun for the Lakers, which, by the way, is hilarious when they say that Jason Kidd going to LA could convince Giannis to go there. I mean, come on. Jason Kidd left one season. The next year, then LA in the damn finals, and Giannis wins MVP. I don't think he's going to be crying for Jason Kidd.
And then just a couple more things about you moving. So, what was like the one big thing about living in America you didn't maybe expect that you were surprised by the most?
I don't know, man. Like it was very honestly, Milwaukee was very similar. The biggest adjustment outside of anything was just the weather. I mean, Milwaukee winter is pretty serious. That's why when I come back here and I'm like, it's not too bad. It's 14 outside. It's like I'm feeling pretty good about this.
Yeah, I haven't worn a beanie yet since since being back in Australia and like in the middle of winter. I'm like, fuck, I don't need a beanie. It's not even fucking that cold. What are you talking about? It's not even snowing. It's not negative fucking 18. I don't give a shit about this.
No, we went to the like I said we went to the Geelong game on Sunday, and we walked from Southern Cross to the G. And it was like 12 degrees, 13 degrees, something like that. All my friends are like rugged up. I'm just sweating. I'm sweating like a fucking maniac. Like walking to the G. I'm just like I can't handle this. I'm like this is too hot. It is too hot out here. So that was the big thing. I mean, we had some serious weather there. We had minus 30 for about a week.
Fuck
week.
That.
Yeah, it was pretty cold.
I remember actually having Creek, the Creek Freak, oddly enough, Mitch Creek, talking about it when he landed in Brooklyn for his, part of his two-way contract and trying out in the middle of winter there and, like, getting out of his car and walking to a lunch because it was basically, it was all snowed in and he nearly died of fucking pneumonia. So that's not great, but that's how it goes when you move over there. It's fucking wild. What's the best Wisconsin beer?
Oh, man. There's so fucking many. Like I have never been I mean, they say it's whatever, the beer capital or whatever, but there is seriously a brewery on every single corner in Milwaukee. It's just ridiculous.
Do you think that's one of the weird, like, sort of underrated aspects about America as well? Like, they've got this horrible, horrible, horrible reputation about beer, like, outside of the States for, you know, having shitty, shitty beer. It's only because, like, you know, you only ever get to see, like, fucking Budweiser or Bud Light and fucking Coors Light, all these shitty beers. But when you actually go literally fucking anywhere in that goddamn country, there's going to be somewhere, like, some, like, there'll be like a massive rash of local breweries that kick fucking ass. Doesn't matter where you are either. Like, everywhere it's fucking good.
Oh, the beer's so good. But you're right. I definitely had people, like, even since I've been back, they're just like, oh, you know what, you want you want to drink American beer? Oh, let's get you a Bud. I'm like, no, I think I had maybe one Bud my whole, like, 10 months I was there. I mean, there's so much good shit to drink. But there was one brewery which was pretty close to where I lived. Broken Bat in Milwaukee. It was like a baseball themed brewery. They make it's super small, but they make their own beers. They had about 15 on tap at any given time, and that was pretty much our spot. We were there a lot.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, I still remember, like, taking buds who'd visit us in New York, and you just go, like, round to the local shitty sports bar, and they'd, like, randomly have, like, fucking 14, 15, 16 beers on, you know, across, like, two or three tap runs. And you're like, all right, cool, man. Let's try this weird one from fucking Pennsylvania, like, that you've never fucking heard of. And it would always be, like, wildly entertainingly fun and good, or maybe, like, a bit of it. You know, they do love their fucking IPAs and they love their weirdly strong beers. So it'd be like, sometimes it'd be fucking like trying to drink soup. But still, it was always weird how that reputation preceded them. But what was there? There was one other thing, the Nutella scandal that you found yourself embroiled in. How did that all wash out? Because the fact that anyone actually pronounces Nutella blew my fucking mind. Like, I don't know if I've gotten angrier about anything in, like, the last 12 months than when I read that. Like, we don't say peanut butter. It's fucking nut. Like, it's a Nutella. What the fuck are we all doing here? Like, 6 years, living in the States 6 years, I never came across anything as egregiously fucking stupid as this.
I know. So one of the things that I always said when I was over there I felt good about was the fact that I never pissed off Giannis or Bud or anyone. Like, I never, like, asked a question that genuinely pissed them off. But I will say, probably the most angry Giannis has got at me all season was over this in the locker room. I can't actually remember what game it was, but I know that everyone was involved. Whatever media were there, I know Howard Beck was there for that game. He was involved in this, like, in this debate. I walked into the locker room, and I didn't even know where it started, but I walked into the locker room, and as soon as I walked into the locker room, Thon was like, he was like, here he is. He's like, Kane, come here now, right now. And I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I'm like, what the hell did I do? And he, like, grabs me, and he's like, come over here. And he's like, Giannis. And he's like, and then he asked me what it was called. I said, well, it's Nutella. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Of course it's Nutella. Like, what is his question? And Giannis, like, loses it. He's like, no, it's not. So Giannis was, like, arguing. Most of the Americans were against me and Thon, so it was me and Thon against the world. But there was Andrew Small was a physio with the Bucks. He's Australian. He's from Brisbane. Suki Hobson is English, but she used to work with the Cats. She was the strength and conditioning coach there, so she was there as well. So it was Thon, me, Andrew, and Suki that were going up against pretty much the whole locker room. But I'm sticking by it. I'm with you. It's nuts. I don't get it. It's not hard.
They're not newts. They're fucking nuts. What's this made of? Is it a hazelnut? No, it's not a fucking hazelnut. It's a hazelnut. Ergo, Nutella. This isn't fucking rocket surgery. Anyway.
I never got it.
Nice one. All right, so, man, Kane, what's the plans for the future then? Like, how do you approach next season? What's the deal? More writing for the pickandroll.com.au, more fun stuff. What are you going to do? What does the future hold for Kane Pittman?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I would like to get back there for next season, but it would be depending on something coming up, just because funding myself for most of that season was a pretty expensive mission. So I don't know whether that's realistically going to be an option. I hope it is. I hope something comes up. I'd like to get back there. But if not, I'll be trying to find anything back here in the media. I don't really want to go back to the old job. I want to keep doing this stuff and keep pushing down this line. So the answer is I have no damn idea, but I guess we're going to try and find out in the next few weeks.
Dig it. Was it cool getting your byline in the Herald Sun and stuff?
Yeah, the Herald Sun was cool, man, because I always read the Herald Sun. That was a paper I read every day. So that was a pretty cool one. And not many people get stuff in print anymore. Everyone's going away from the newspaper. So there was even some of the guys over there were just like that were in the media were just like, I've never even had anything in the newspaper because people don't do it anymore. So that was cool. That was cool.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll keep reading you on the pickandroll.com.au. And, man, we're going to get you in the studio here in, Larry Arm Studios for NBA Australia in person. Just because, hey, man, it's fucking great chatting to you. You're one of the great, great Australian basketball Twitter followers. So everybody go follow Kane Pittman on Twitter. I'm pretty sure literally everybody who's listening to NBA Australia already follows you. So I'm pretty sure this checks out. But that was legendary. Thanks for coming on NBA Australia, Kane. It's been unreal.
No, thanks for having me, mate. This is a long time coming. I did listen to it pretty regularly over there in Milwaukee, so I appreciate it.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. And that is it. What an awesome chat with Kane Pittman. Thanks heaps to Kane for coming on. As mentioned, go read all of his stuff on thepickandroll.com.au. Follow him on Twitter. He's an amazing, amazing Twitter follow. That was a really, really fun chat. Really enjoyed that. That's it for today. We are back next week with another guest. As I said, we're going to be weekly for the next little bit. Slow off season, which is nice. Going to get a little bit of time off. Hang out with the squid and old mate. Might even get old mate on next week's show. That'd be pretty funny. In the meantime, make sure you're following NBA Story on Twitter, Facey, Instagram. We're all over the socials all the time. You know that. We've got NBA Story Never Forget happening all off-season, which is unreal. Get around NBAStory.com. If you're going to go buy some shit from Amazon, first go to NBAStory.com, then click on the giant big Amazon button on the right-hand side down the bottom. They kick us a shekel or two if you go buy some shit that way. That's awesome. Check us rating and review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever app you use on your Android, I guess. Yeah. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, all that good stuff. Anyway, rate and review. Helps out heaps. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their debut album, Running Out of Time, is out now. It's the best Australian album of 2019. Hands bloody down. Also, big thanks to Fascinator, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Jedi, Green, 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 and Dozers for all the tunes you hear on NBA Australia. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp and Facey. Remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands. And that's it. We're going to close out with an old episode of Cooking with Bainesy. Legendary. Oh, I love a bit of Cooking with Bainesy. And we will catch you next week, you dickheads. This is NBA Australia saying, later, hold on.
Cooking with Bainesy is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
And now it's time for Cooking with Bainesy with your host, Aaron Bangers Baines. Oh, g'day. All right, settle down over there. Come on. Oh, yeah, I see you. Oh, look at you, Cheryl. Yes, there's the way. All right, settle down. All right. Look at you all. All right, g'day. Welcome to Cooking with Bainesy. I'm your host, Aaron Bangers Bainesy. In this here episode, we're going to whip up one of my absolute Aussie favourites that you can have whenever you want it. It's just beautiful. Any day, any time, it's an absolute rip snorter. That Aussie classic, laksa. That's right. Love me some laksa. And it's easy as, mate. Like, definitely heaps, like, more interesting, way more cool than, like, just bangers and mash that I'm usually cooking. And it definitely helps keep up this physique, you know what I'm saying? So, anyway, look, it's bloody simple, mate. All right, let's get stuck in. All right, here we go. All you gotta do is go down to your soupy, load up on a thing of laksa paste, grab some coconut milk, like one thing will do, one tin of it, some noodles, and no, not the 2-minute type, mind you, the fancy ones, like hot kind noodles and shit. So, I'd even say, like, you do this, and look, don't be a coward. Get a shit ton of chilies while you're there as well, and some spring onions, some bean sprouts and coriander, maybe a couple of limes. They go pretty well with your tins as well, you know what I'm saying? So, look, We're going to do a seafood one here as well because it's bang on, mate. So you go down to your fishmonger. His name's probably Vasily or some shit. You get him to hook you up with some fish, handful of prawns and like some scallops and mussels and stuff. Vasily will sort you out. Don't worry about it. On you, Vasily. Hey, there you are. Right, so cook up some seafood broth. Bang your coconut milk in there with your paste. Oh, look at that. Oh, mix that all up. There you go. Look, now chuck in, like when it's boiling, chuck in your seafood and fish and shit and cook that up. Oh, look at that. It looks beautiful, doesn't it? Now just sit back, grab a tin, maybe chuck a lime in there if it's a Corona tinny, and then like cook your noodles on the side. And when that's all fucking cooked in the big pot, just bang in your chilies, your spring onion, your coriander, bang your noodles into a bowl, cover it up with your laksa, sprinkle your bean sprouts and coriander on there. Then garnish it with a bit of lime and Bob's your fucking uncle. Look at that. That is an absolute rip snorter. Oh, that is beautiful, isn't it? That is bangers as laksa, mate. And it is just bloody delicious. That'll dead set impress the Sheila as well, you know what I'm saying? Don't you worry about that. All right, how easy was that? Look, you just learned how to make laksa. That's legendary. Go home, do it yourselves. You'll love it. All right, tune in to NBA Australia next week for a new recipe and we'll see you then on the next episode of... Cooking with Bainesy.